because risk is constant, that I was just willing to take risks that I think a lot of people aren't. You know, a lot of times we get tripped up in our head. We get into indecision mode. We don't take a step forward. Like we know this is a good idea, but then we get tripped up and we never take an action, you know? And for me, like I came from nothing. So every risk could just give me a better positive outcome.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. It's the podcast for artist makers and content creators where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. Now, I just want to say thank you to all of you who have just taken a moment to leave a review or a rating on the podcast. You know that if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, at the end of every episode, I just put in that little plug to say, hey, please take a moment and leave a rating or review. It's helpful for people to find this podcast. And really, that's my motivation. It's not like, hey, pat me on the back. It's not fishing for compliments. I really just want these conversations to be heard by as many people as possible because I know they're helpful for me. And obviously, they're helpful for you because you're listening. And maybe they're helpful for some of your friends or colleagues. And you could just take a moment and share it with them and say, hey, I thought of you when I was listening to this episode. This reminds me of a conversation we had the other day or something we've been wrestling through. So all that to say, thank you so much for those of you who have taken the time to leave a rating or a review. And if you haven't, it's not too late. It's very easy to do on whatever platform you're listening on. They usually make it just really simple, just a couple of clicks and just write something real simple, a sentence or two of just what's been speaking to you or why a certain episode is meaningful to you. And that would be so appreciated. And again, thank you for those of you who did that. Now for this week, I get to sit down with my friend, Paul Pruitt. Now you may be thinking to yourself, wait, Pruitt, that sounds familiar. That's because I had a creative chat with Paul's wife, Melissa, a couple of episodes ago. And if you haven't heard that episode, go back and listen to it. I know you're gonna enjoy it. We talk about so many different great things, and specifically even within the social media sphere of how to leverage social media for your creativity and your business. But this week, I get to speak with her other half, Paul, and they are just such an awesome couple. Now, Paul and Melissa, they lead and they give and they serve with authenticity. And I know you're gonna hear that in our conversation today. Paul is somebody who's been a lifelong entrepreneur. He has been involved with photography businesses and real estate and online businesses and had tremendous, you know, multi-million dollar success and then also been in the valley where he's lost everything and then come back again. And so when he shares things, he's not sharing things from a sense of here's what other people are saying. Here's what are some things that I read in a book. He's sharing from real life practical experiences. And every time Paul shares, I always think to myself, I need to come back and listen to this again. And I know that there are things that I need to think about more, to wrestle with more, to come around and figure out how can I apply these things that he's talking about. He thinks a little differently than most people. He looks for opportunity and he doesn't shy away from risk. We talk about these things and more on this episode. And I know you're really going to love this and be challenged by the things that Paul says. As a matter of fact, I think that you're probably going to want to listen to this more than once as well, because there's just that much good stuff in this episode. Personal life wisdom, business wisdom, and just a great heart. And I love how Paul blends together just that heart to serve and then also business smarts. And he is a real cheerleader for anyone else who is looking to create things, to have an online business, other entrepreneurs. He is someone who you want to sit up and take notice of the things that he's talking about and really get around him. So without further ado, here is my creative chat with Paul Pruitt. Paul, welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you here today, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so blessed. Thank you for inviting me onto your show and to talk to your audience. Thank thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah. You know, we met a couple months ago. Well, maybe, is it a couple months? I guess it is. I don't know. You know, right now it feels like everything's upside down. But, you know, from the first moment that I met you and heard you speak on stage, I was like, wow. You have such an incredible story and message. And I was like, oh man, I wish you had more than one session. I wish you had multiple slots. And, you know, thankfully we had a chance to connect offline and just talk a little bit more. But, you know, the more I start to get around you and realizing that, like, wow, you have, again, such a powerful story and journey and so many lessons that are valuable for others to hear as well. So I'm excited to get into some of that stuff today. But before we go too far down that trail, can you just let us know, who is Paul Pruitt? What do you do? What's going on in your world?
Isn't that the question we all have? Who am I? I feel like we're all in a constant state of evolution. So how would I define that now is probably completely different than 10 years from now or 10 years ago. Currently right now, because I've been a creative my entire life, and I've actually navigated that creativity through entrepreneurship and coaching other entrepreneurs that are doing like online courses and memberships, and they want to grow and scale those opportunities. And it's something that if you said this like 10 years ago or even 5 years ago, there would actually be two different stories there. You know, I've been a photographer my entire life. I've been a creative. When I was a child, my father was a professional musician. He was a guitar player, lead guitar player actually for Bill Haley and the Comets back in the late 60s, early 70s. So creativity has kind of been in the family genes in general. How far back do you want me to go? Not beginning of time. but it is something like right now, I just feel like any artist, I think we're all on a journey. And if we reflect back who we were 5 or 10 years ago, we probably wouldn't even recognize that person. And I'm just excited like where we're at right this second. But right now we're helping entrepreneurs, you know, because definitely it's never been a more important time than ever to be online. I think a lot of us have realized that over the years, and it's just something like there, more people are online, more opportunities are there, and we've had our blinders on that in the past. I think a lot of, especially creatives, you know, because we want to hold our art, and you know, a lot of times it's tangible and it's in person and it's real, and it's hard to like let go of that element and like lean into the online space a lot of times.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a lot to be said for not just creating art, but then also helping other people create their art. And that's really where I'm at that place now, where I'm really trying to lean into that and leverage my experiences, my stories, and really cheerlead and come alongside some other people who are trying to create some stuff as well. So, and I know you're doing that as well. So that's awesome.
That's you know, it's like any opportunity that any of us have this ripple effect in the world, where we take our, because all of us just go through our own journey. We get experience, we get knowledge and expertise. And it's just great to hear you say that, because it's like you gathered that knowledge in, either through self-experience or through mentors. And then you're able to transfer that and help change other people. It's like the ripple, you know, just continuously flows. That's the one thing I love about what we do as well. So it's great to see that excitement on you as well.
Yeah, that's a big part of my story, is trying to find redemption, even in the places where you're like, this part of my story is pretty jacked up, and I wouldn't necessarily want to talk about this, but I'm going to, because I see the value in sharing it and redeeming it, especially if it can help other people.
I think we all grew up like generations ago, like if something's not perfect, it doesn't come out of the household. You don't talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all the struggles, all the internal things. I definitely think social media has kind of changed that a lot. Like people may expose a little too much. But I believe we, in a way, we all have stories. We might have varying degrees of our stories, but I don't think any of us are excluded from any of the real world hardships. You know, we're going to have death, we're going to have divorce, we're going to have loss, we're going to have other things. It just manifests, you know, in different ways. So, and that's one thing I learned a long time ago. And that's probably part of what you saw when I spoke on stage, is that the vulnerability of being open these days and saying, you know what, it's okay to share that story, you know, and that's something that I learned in the last couple of years, is when you share a story from a like a scar, then the emotional attachment is not as necessarily anchored as much. So everybody's more open and they want to hear, because there's a connection point there. It's like they can relate, like they themselves or a family member or a friend experience the same thing. Where it's a little bit dangerous, and this is what I think a lot of people do online, is, you know, and then the reference that the analogy I heard was when you tell a story from the scab, where it's not healed yet, you know, where you're still going through that experience, because then people react differently, to that story. But I, from beginning of time, we've all transferred knowledge through story, you know? So I think all of us are blessed if we open ourselves up and be a little bit more vulnerable, because you'll find that you have more in common with others than you realize. But when we isolate ourselves and keep our story to ourselves, then we think we're the only one that's going through that struggle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you talked a little bit about childhood already, but let's dial that back. So you're in a creative household. What does creativity look like for you as a kid? Is there a certain either expression or experience that you had that's really vivid for you, that was maybe a time when you were like, okay, this is signifying to me that I'm a creative person. I need to do more of this.
Yeah, it's probably not the story that everybody else will have, or maybe there's some that are listening that maybe they need to hear this, but that I gave you the little sound bite about like the cool part of my childhood, but in reality, I was a child of addiction, where my mom and dad both were addicts, very active. They were not around a lot. My sister and I were passed around from family to family. Depending on where we lived at the moment or time, you know, it's more 70 or 80 homes that I've lived in my entire life. Mm-hmm. And why do I say that? Because from a creative standpoint, I had to have resiliency. We didn't always have toys. We didn't always have clothes. We didn't have things. We had to like get creative we had to make something out of nothing. You know, so it's like we had to, you know, my sister and I, we had to figure out games. We had to figure out things to do. We didn't have technology and gadgets and screens, and we didn't even have Monopoly, you know, so it was just like, so I just think just naturally, the resilience and the creativeness came from just, exploring the natural world. And like, in my entire life, I just asked myself a different question. Like, how can this be fun? What can we do? Like, what is the possibilities versus why me, you know, type thing. So it's just something that I think earlier on, like at 7 years old, my grandmother gave me $20 and there was a community yard sale. And the reason why I got that $20 is because one of the garages that I went into, this lady was there, and she was an elderly lady, and her husband had just passed away, and he previously was a wedding photographer. And there was all this photography gear, you know, sitting there. Now I'm like 7 years old. Like, I don't know anything about this, but it just looked cool, you know? And the lady said, like, let me know how much money you have and I might sell it to you. So I went back, my grandmother gave me $20 and I was like, oh my, like, this is like hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of gear. Mm-hmm. And when I went back and I was just like, this is all I have. And the lady's like, sold, you know? And as a kid, I didn't know what I was doing. And I played around, and I'd say that's probably where things got a little bit more real for me. I didn't know what I was doing, what I was aiming at, but I learned the camera, you know, back before digital, where you had to know what kind of film that you're going to put in the camera to begin with. It was a Canon AE-1, if anybody knows what that is, but I still have that camera to this day. It's an imprint on my childhood, because it will come into as a factor my creativity later on as an adult as well. But it's just something, I think that was probably one of the bigger moments right there. And I have to say, like, through my life and business life, as well as my creative journey, I use a lot of analogies about camera and lenses, and we'll probably explore that as you ask me more questions here.
Sure.
But I would just say, from my childhood, there's a natural resilience of looking at the world and trying to, like, you know, as kids, we looked up at the clouds and we saw Snoopy, or we saw a truck, or, you know, well, I still do that to this day. I still do that to this day. You know, I haven't let that part of me go. And I think that's important for a lot of us.
Yeah, totally. Because I think so many times we're trying to recapture something of a childhood anyway. As we get older, you know, we're like, there was something pure back then. There was something that allowed us to enter into play and be a version of us that was not shackled with expectation or, you know, clients, meetings, responsibilities, you know, right. all that stuff that tends to kind of crush you sometimes. None of that was there. And it's just, I'm showing up and I'm having fun. I'm being me because I don't know how to be anybody else, you know?
Exactly. Because we didn't have any restrictions. We didn't know there were rules until they're introduced to us. Like yeah. everything was, you know, jumping from one couch to the other is just to avoid the lava on the floor.
Yes.
Like, why don't we do that as adults? know, it's like, no, we create rules. That's not proper. You know, we give ourselves structure and rules, and this is what it means to be, you know, etiquette and polite and civilized. And
yeah,
we should just jump on our couches.
I think me and you need to bring that back, Paul. We're going to do the lava club. That's awesome. So now you didn't go right from childhood experiencing the the love for the camera and photography right into that straight yes. away, right?
No, I'd say through a grade school and in high school, I did poetry, short story writing. I would be the kid in class, and it was really interesting because I was in all the advanced classes. Like I retain information. I was bad. I didn't do the homework, but I would retain the, I would test really, really well. So I was in all the AP, all the college prep, advanced stuff. But in English, like I would always get like 100 for creativity, but then that red marker would be littered throughout the entire document, where the grammar, the punctuation, the sentence structure, the spelling was all off. It was like, it was horrible. It was like a murder scene. And it was just like, it was crazy because of all the red marks. But it's just something that I think that just the expression of creativity, in high school they had a drama class. So I did acting a little bit, and poetry, did a lot of poetry at the time. But I kept coming back to photography. So in high school, I took 4 years of photography. I won a couple awards regionally. I had some work that traveled around an exhibition throughout our little state. And my love was naturally, it was just there. But, when you graduate high school, you're told you're supposed to do certain things and have certain achievements. Well, good, bad, or indifferent, my family had very low expectation because, again, I told you about my childhood a little bit. And everybody barely got a GED, let alone none of them went to college. So it was just that expectation wasn't there. But I had a family member that was in real estate. So I went right out of high school, right into real estate. And it did very, very well. Now, I still kept photography. I still did it as an escape. But what's funny is the reason why I even went in that direction is after I graduated high school that summer, I had a bad dream that I was a failed photographer photographing the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus at the local mall. And because of that dream, I went and took the real estate course. It was only 99 hours. I was like, oh, this is great. Like, everybody else is going to go to college for the next 8 years, and I'm going to take a 99-hour class and call myself a professional. Like, this is awesome. But it just, ironically, though, I took the creativity that I just naturally, and the resiliency that I had. And I think it also, coming from that kind of background, you're just, because risk is constant, that I was just willing to take risks that I think a lot of people aren't. A lot of times we get tripped up in our head. We get into indecision mode. We don't take a step forward. Like we know this is a good idea, but then we get tripped up and we never take an action, And for me, like I came from nothing. So every risk could just give me a better positive outcome. And if it didn't go well, I probably wouldn't go back to how things used to be, very bad. So I was always willing to take risks. So first year on real estate, 18 years old, going 19 years old, I made $48,000, and I never made less than six figures, again, in that world. And it's just something that allowed me to have, but what I did is I redirected my creativity into business, into sales, into, because as an agent, you're commission based, you're self-employed. Sure. Like you don't work for anybody. So I'm 47 now, depending on when you listen to this. maybe I look really good for my age by the time you but it's just something that all these years, I've never worked for anybody else. I've always been self-employed. And it's just something that, again, that creativity that led me down the path of being a very successful agent, then into buying half ownership the office that I worked for, which was 16 agents at the time, including myself, to within the year after that. So I was in 97 and 98. I bought out totally the previous owner. And then within 3 years, I grew it to 8 offices, over 200 agents, 16 employees, ranked 83 in the world of number of homes sold with Century 21 Corporation. So over 8,000 offices, we ranked 83 in the world. And it was just taking that risk. It was making decisions, being willing to lean in. And then 2008 happened, and the financial crisis, but that revealed, unfortunately, that a family member had dipped their fingers into the pot in the tune of over $600,000 and imploded. So I know this is a long story. I apologize. I'm taking
please do.
But it's just something I just want you on. There's so many like pivot points. And I think a lot of us, especially as creatives, we think the decision of what we make today is permanent. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It is a stepping stone. And like I said at the beginning, it's like who I was 5 years ago or 10 years ago or maybe 10 years from now is a completely different person. Like if you said, who is Paul? And I think a lot of us, if we really take that time and reflect on that, that we are all in a constant state of evolution. Mm-hmm. So in a moment, I lost everything. I went from very poor background to a multimillionaire to losing everything and being over $3 million in debt, living in the truck that used to put the signs up in the yards back in 2008. Lost my house, my cars, everything. I was living in that truck for a couple weeks before a childhood friend actually invited me to live on his couch because he could tell on social media that something was wrong. And I had to reinvent myself. So I went from bottom to up on top of the world, doing everything ethically, everything right, to losing everything and then having to start all over again. And it was really tough. And I think naturally when you go through a moment of loss and transition, like there's a lot of things that can get into your head, the whys and the, you know, why this happened to me, what's going on, like me. And then when you get through that cycle though, you start saying, okay, now what does this make possible? What is the next step? What are the opportunities? Like I wasn't 100% happy with what I built, you know, as a machine, I was running around like nuts. Like it sounds cool, you know, doing all that, but like you're responsible for over 200 people. Like there's a lot of stuff on your shoulders, mm-hmm. you know? The 30-second version of everybody's story is always the cool version, the highlight reel. You know, it's really the extra stuff, right? And so that just led me into, relooking at myself and just saying, you know what, photography as a child and the creativity really like fulfilled me internally. And it's like, I had the photography gear, I had lighting, I had the lenses, and everything. I've upgraded because as I did really well in real estate through the years, I would hire mentors when I was traveling and I'd learn off the top photographers and in different niches and industries and that were published and, you know, very well known. But it was just my escape, my outlet. So I had to lean in on that. And I think a lot of creatives do that. There's a certain point they're like, how do I monetize my craft? Like, how do I monetize this thing? Yeah. Now that changes the relationship of your thing, you know, because now you need to provide. So when you do art for yourself, it just doesn't matter if it's right or wrong or this or that. It's the composition, it's the rule of thirds, they're like the golden rule, like all these things, like all this stuff doesn't matter when you do it for yourself. When you do it for third party, when you do it for external, then the buyer shifts, you know, who's right in this situation. So I had to just get creative and look to see where the money flowed. And I went into things that I didn't want to photograph. I wanted to do fun and creative stuff, but the money flowed into headshots and weddings. And that's where I went at that point, just to be able to provide and rebuild. And very thankful, just took a short period of time and was able to rebuild and create a multi six-figure business in that space, which then allowed me to photograph and do the fun things that I didn't have to charge for.
Yeah.
And I think it's where a lot of artists sometimes get confined is they want to push like their vision, what they do when you go into an open market. Now, if you're hanging stuff in galleries and everything, you know, if you position yourself and people see and you build a name and you have a great story, no matter what the piece is, if there's a great story behind it, that's what people are going to grab onto. That's what they're going to love as much as the piece itself. That's what gives it its value. But it's something that if you're going out there into the real world and you need to push something that's more commercial, then you really have to be okay on your creative side to be like, okay, I need to provide what the consumer wants, or the consumer could be a company, it could be an individual. And that might not be your number one thing that you want to do in your creative outlet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So headshots is very mechanical. It's very, you know, science. It's like there's certain way that you hold your head that looks great, and there's other ways it doesn't. So we want to do it the right way. Well, that doesn't leave a lot of creativity, you know, in doing that. becomes more process. But you know what? Paid the bills in a very, very big way. And we no longer have our photography business. We actually closed it at its top. Just shy of $300,000, over 5,000 headshots in that year. And we eliminate that because we took that creativity and we built a totally location independent business online. And I'm able to now guide and help entrepreneurs. So there's different seasons, you know, and you can still take that creativity. It might today be with a brush, another day it might be a lens. But the great thing that we have as creatives is that we just see the world differently. We have a different view, we have a different lens. And even what's going on in the world, no matter what it is, you know, I use photography a lot, and it's like, I control what I focus on. So yeah. A lot of people in the world have limited depth of field. And so it's like, what are they focusing on? Like, that's, we can all see the same picture, but focus on something completely different, you know, and we can interpret that same picture, you know, photograph, you know, whatever it is, painting, that doesn't matter what it is. We can have it completely different because we're focusing on something completely different, even though it's the same thing that we're looking at. So for me, I just always ask what's possible. I always ask, what's the next step? Where's the opportunity? How can I make this better? How can I improve? You know, who would be interested in my art? Yeah. Like, where, you know, because that gives you different answers. You know?
Yeah. So let me ask you that. If somebody is looking at this in terms of, okay, so Paul, you're saying lean into those areas where there's more of a market for something, people are willing to pay. And yet I'm struggling with the whole, I want to be the artist. I want to be true to myself. I want true to my creative expression. How does somebody successfully go about looking to see where the money is, as you said, but still maintaining that sense of either what they would call, you know, integrity or authenticity, so that they're not like positioning themselves in a way that's false or trying to be somebody that they're not, but that at the same time also, like you said, going for where the money is, where people will be willing to pay for their art or their creativity.
Right. I will say that I wish there was a perfect answer, because there's going to be some artists, and I totally love and appreciate and respect, that they're going to have a hard stance no matter what, that they're going to feel like they're going to be a sellout. Like you see this more obviously, like in the music world,
yeah,
where you have somebody who's like an indie, you know, and they just love, and they have a certain sound and everything, and they're grassroots, and they go around all the little bars and the colleges and everybody, and they get this big following, and then one day a record label finds them and puts them up on the big stage, and then all their base says, you sold out, you know? And it's like, well, wasn't that their dream? wasn't that like what they, I think there's that delicate balance though, because we all have different values. We all have different belief systems, and what you believe is true for you, you're 100% right. You know, so it's something like, if you hold on to your pride and to your art and to your style, your art might be worth something in a couple hundred years, just like all the masters that we've seen. They weren't worth anything at the time that they were alive, you know, but when they become scarce and there was a story and time went by, like if that is your goal, then it's okay. Be a starving artist right now, you know, because it's not the supply and demand in the moment right now. And maybe beyond your lifetime, your work will be celebrated on a whole different level. And at the, so I always look at that, there's that compromise. I look at it as it's really the artist's struggle, you know, that we all go through. The moment we decide that we want to monetize our art, we have made a decision that our art, good, bad, or indifferent, our art has become a product in the market. And that is a hard thing for artists to take. Well, you made the decision to monetize, because if you do the art for yourself, you can hang it yourself, you can give it away, you know, and people will love it and appreciate the emotional attachment that they have and the gift that you gave, and that you're spreading it around the world. Now, the moment that you say, what I love and what I'm doing, I want you to give me your hard-earned money that you worked hard for, that you went to your job and worked months for, whatever, depending on how you're pricing this. Like, you know, if I want you to exchange the value of what you put your time, expertise into, what the thing that you did, I want you to give it to me as a fair exchange, because the perceived value of this artwork to you, from me to you. Now that, now you're in the marketplace now. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's supply and demand, and there's a lot of supply. you know, good, better, and different. There's a lot of us that are artists, but you know what? You're unique. You have your own style. You have your own technique. You have your own story. You have your own brand, your own positioning. And what you're going to find is the biggest difference, like, because let's face it, we've all been there. No matter what it is, we have this external thing. There's a little bit of sense of, I'm going to hesitate, but I'm going to call it jealousy, maybe some frustration, where you know people that don't have as good a technique that you do. You know people that don't have the same skill level, that don't have the exact style that you have. I mean, technically on all levels, if somebody was to rate things and there was a real rating system, you would probably score way higher. You would be like at level 10, right? As far as your talent, your technique, you know, your style and everything. But you wrap it around a level one opportunity. Like mm-hmm. You were like, people have to accept who I am and they need to change their values and how they see the world in order to buy my thing, right? Where there's somebody else that has purposely created relationships in certain circles that have put themselves on the radar, that are okay with having a story, that have a persona or a brand that they put around their work. Because really what you want to do, the value really comes, and that's what I think is a big struggle for a lot of people, is that when you put a piece out, we're proud. We spend time, energy, and effort on the piece itself. What has good, better, and different in the open market, its brand, its label, its positioning. It's because the signature that goes on that piece can make it worth $1 and can make it worth millions of dollars just because of the signature. And what is the signature? It's nothing. It's perception. It's positioning. It's branding. It's a story. Was it really the technique? No, because you know there's work out there that is subservient to yours as far as technique, as to skill set, no matter what it is. But there are people out there making an incredible living or making incredible pieces of work that are selling for ridiculous prices, that are on demand, that are selling before they even create it. Why is a piece being sold before it's even created at such a high demand? It's because the people that are buying it aren't as interested in the piece as they are in the story and the positioning of the artists themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you spend your entire time to isolate yourself from everybody, to kick everybody away, your art might be worth something once you're gone. But right now, you're in the open market.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of artists that I talk to that, you know, because art is so such a personal thing,
yeah,
and interpreted different ways, people say, well, how do I really sell my art? Because, you know, it's either they're interested in this piece, they find some beauty in it, or they don't. And, you know, I usually get into conversations about, like, well, you're not really selling that piece of art. That art is like a symbol. It's like a representation. And maybe somebody really likes that landscape piece you did because it reminds them of a summer vacation they had with their family and these memories of this time in their life when things were so sweet, mm-hmm. and a moment where they wish they could just bottle that and be there forever. And your piece represents that. Mm-hmm. And so you have invited them into something, but now they're bringing their own thing to it and it becomes something much larger. And I'm like, that's really the thing that you're selling. You're not selling, you know, canvas and paint and this specific brush stroke or whatever it is on that canvas. It's that experience and that story behind that connects, you know?
Yeah. So this is something I didn't share too often, but through the years of reinventing myself, I had different iterations of photography studio, but for many years I had a co-op studio that I created, and that helped me offset my costs. But I had members and allowed them to display their work. Cause in our area, every first Friday of the month was called the Art Loop. And there would be about 30 locations that would open up in the city, and there would be bus tour and there would be an after party, but it was a great opportunity for, you know, artists to show their work. Now, after I exhausted my members, which mainly were photographers, I opened it up to other artists in the area. Now, the ones that did participate, they came in because we had a gallery, a full-blown gallery. They could hang about 30 pieces. And what happened is about 2,000 square feet in this area. But what happened was those that just came in to hang and then they didn't show on the, they had no story. Mm-hmm. They had nothing. So people would come and they would look and they would admire and talk among themselves, and then they would walk away. So the artist was very minimalistic, like, oh, thank you for the opportunity. They put it up. They didn't even put like a placard or anything to explain the piece. There was no artist statement. There was nothing, right? So that level of effort, they made it all about the art. Mm-hmm. They made it all about the art, right? And then what happened was what we saw, because most of these people wanted to sell their pieces. Now, what we saw is a huge shift of those artists that were like, you know what? I'm taking the extra time, the extra effort. Let me explain the background, the reasoning behind this piece. Let me, the state of mind, the part of my life I was in, you know, what I was thinking about when I did this. So when you have that story, because all of us, we go into a trance. This is from beginning of time. When we start the spoken word, you know, in as human beings, we, through our ancestries, has always been through story. That is where folklore came from. That's where everything that we know from the past is a story that was transmitted forward to us. We learn through story, okay? So you want to create connection points, as you said. So what happens is the artists that would take the time to do this, the ones that would show up, they would actually, when the person is staring at the piece, thinking about their childhood, the artist is there to engage in that conversation. So it's just something like they, you can easily guide people into that. It's not hard selling. It's like you are now part of, you can complement so that they anchor that experience, that emotional experience that they had with the moment that you had while you were creating the piece. So if you can show the connection point for them, it's like it becomes a no-brainer that like the people are emotionally locked in. They're going to want the piece. Other than that, I just say there's, if you position yourself among a certain circle, there's the other side, which is also status. So if you create a brand for yourself, if you create a, you know, people will just buy a piece so they can brag to their friends. So they can brag, oh, I have a blank up on my wall. You know, so there is that other piece where it doesn't, you know, the other side of this when it comes to like branding and positioning. And a lot of people do know. And again, you get frustrated because you see the work and you're like, there's a dot on a white canvas, like, yeah. You know, and that just sold for, you know, $2 million. It's because the person that bought it has their status to say, I own that, and to put it, and you can agree with it or disagree with it. It's just human psychology. It's what's there, yeah. You know? And so I do recommend to get involved. You have to create, you know, your artist statement. You have to think like, how can the person that potentially would buy your work, how can they relate and connect with you? Because if you lack connection points, then there's a disconnect. There's no emotion, and we all buy on emotion. You know, so just something without that emotional connection into the piece, without that story, then they can't even, when they get it home and put it somewhere, they can't even explain it to, like, oh, it looked nice. It just looked weird. Like, no, they don't want to say that. Yeah, exactly. And if that's the route you're going, then you're licensing your stuff and you're selling it to IKEA or something or Target. Like, you went a different direction. You know, if you're creating a commission piece or one of a kind piece or something that's uniquely expressive, that lack of story, just again, it puts it back just being, just the paint itself and the brush or in the canvas, like it's empty, you know, and it's hard for artists to, because we want to coddle our thing, you know, but this is the thing we always need to keep in mind in the market. If we present something in the market and we put a price point on it and we want people to pay. Now, this is the hardest realization. Let's say that you have a piece or you have a collection and you put it out there and you have a showing and nobody buys anything. You try it again, nobody buys anything. Well, guess what? You are the highest bidder because you're the only one, you're walking back home with your art. Mm. You are the highest buyer of your work because you have not positioned yourself or the work, or, you know, you haven't branded yourself properly, or there's some incongruency to the market and your message. You are the highest bidder because nobody is willing to invest. They are paying. They are buying something somewhere else. And your pride, a lot of times, the ego that we have a lot of times hurts us in that pursuit. And sometimes we have to just quietly tuck that tail between the legs just for a moment, just to find those connection points. Because think about it, and really take your art away. Just like if you sat down with a conversation with somebody and they made it all about themselves and never asked you a question, how would you feel? Yeah. Well, that's what a lot of us are doing as artists. We're making it all about ourselves.
Mm-hmm. It's one-sided. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, like we don't like conversations like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is tough on a podcast because you keep asking the questions.
Oh man, so many good things in there. Ooh, I feel like we could have like a part two on this too. But you know, I love how you have taken at every turn your experiences and figured out, okay, what's right for this season. And then if it's not, if you feel like things aren't how they're supposed to be, there's a pivot point. And then you're like, okay, let's figure this out. Let's reinvent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's, I think sometimes you're right. You said this earlier on how people get into this mentality of like thinking too concretely.
Oh yeah.
Like I am a visual artist. I am a graphic designer. I am a photographer, fill in the blank. And yet really underneath that, we're this creative person, and that creativity can seep out in multiple ways, in multiple mm-hmm. expressions.
It's true.
And I remember having a time in my life where I felt like because I was interested in music and I was interested a little bit in photography, just kind of, you know, hobbyist stuff. And a lot of all these different creative expressions, I felt like they were at war with each other. I felt like, well, if I'm paying attention to one, then the other one's going to lack. You know, it's almost like having multiple kids and going like, well, if I feed this one's going to starve, you know? And so feeling like I was juggling around. And it wasn't until I came to this perspective and understanding, it's like, no, it's all one because I'm one person. Mm-hmm. And there may be different seasons and expressions during those seasons, but that's okay.
Yeah.
I may go a while without picking up my guitar, but that doesn't mean that I love music any less.
True.
It just means that maybe right now in this season, that's not the thing that I'm focusing on. That's not what I'm pouring into, and to be okay with that. So I love how you have allowed that in your story as well. You've had room for that, and you've been very intentional mm-hmm. about these things as well, which yeah. is what I really appreciate too, as you share your story and these different points. Is that you're looking for those opportunities, you're leaning in, and you're figuring out, how do I move this forward? And if it's time to pivot into something, what does it look like, right? And yeah. is that process, is it more improvisational for you? Like you kind of get in there, figure out how to do it as you're doing it? Or is there a lot more like research and methodology on the front end going, okay, here's what other people have done, here's what I think I'm going to do in response to that, you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I think coming back in, because I wanted, there's a couple points that you mentioned there. I think at the end of the day, we all want to feel happy and fulfilled. And in part of our life, that, like for your story, like that might have manifested in like picking up that guitar. The guitar, it feels like the vehicle. You know, it's the vehicle to give your expression, to have your creativity so that you feel fulfilled. And it served its purpose in those moments. And I think it's okay that if in the moment you didn't pick up the guitar and you leaned into something else, that's where the fulfillment was for you in that moment. The vehicle can change. One day the vehicle could be a paintbrush, could be a camera lens, it could be singing, it could, whatever it is, right? That what we're really looking for is we want to be happy. We want to feel fulfilled, right? And it's just something, if we just give ourselves permission not to feel guilty to, you know, for you to be multi-passionate in some cases. Now, if you're trying to monetize 15 different things, like that probably confuses the market. Right. So, you know, if you're monetizing, but as an artist and just expressing, like how many artists do we know where maybe they are, example on your end, like I know the digital art that you've done because I see it online. That's how we met in that context. I didn't know the other art that you have behind you right now that I see, or that you even picked up the guitar. Yeah. You know, like, so I think a lot of times we think like we have to have this one label, like we are self-defined as this, you know what? And as human beings, we're way more complex than that. Like we have so much more depth that we're more than the thing that we do for a living.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of us, we're a husband, we're a wife, we're a son, we're a daughter, we're an uncle, we're an aunt. Like we have all these other elements. You know, we love to travel, we experience this or whatever. Like there's this three-dimensional. I think a lot of times we look at ourselves as two-dimensional when really there's more depth and we're really three-dimensional beings. And we have to allow ourselves that space to do that. Now for me, when it comes to the following up on the question you had though, is coming into like the creative process, or how do I lean in or discover these pivot points or opportunity? I'd say I think like a lot of us, like, and again, a lot of people in my family, because my dad played guitar, they thought I was going to pick up the guitar, and I'm left-handed, and he wouldn't restring any of his guitars for me. And he just didn't teach me, you know, right-handed. And that's the excuse I use, at least growing up. I wasn't interested. That's really what it came down to. So I picked up a camera instead. I found a different creative outlet. Now, the interesting thing, though, is that if he only played the guitar every once in a while, you would have to stare at it. You'd have to go ABC, you know, the conscious competence, where you really are being very conscious of what you do. But then when you do it so much, like people just riff on, you know, on instruments and creative outlets and painting and other art and everything. And you just sit back and you're amazed. But you don't realize that, you know, as they say, the 10,000 hours that a person put into perfecting what they do, to the point that it's unconscious competence where they just do it. And it's like breathing. They just don't think about it anymore. And I feel like through my life, you know, like earlier on, the evaluating things and seeing the opportunities was a little bit more mechanical. Where now, you know, like no joke, like Melissa and I were walking our dog yesterday, and I just, you know, in walking, I was like, you know what? I was just, you know, I was just thinking of something, and it's just very obvious. I think this is the thing that we should do next. And she was just like, her mouth dropped. She's like, where did that come from? Oh my gosh. Like, and she, even last night, she's like, I just want to let you know, that was the greatest idea ever, you know? And like, you know, why didn't we think of that before? And so for me, it's a little bit more unconscious now, where I just see the opportunities, and it's just because I made it important. I put the time in originally, didn't come that, you know, originally that easily, but it's just something that I've redirected my creativity. You know, and the interesting thing, as much as a lot of us do chaos, you know, like some people do art, like chaos and randomness, whatever, a lot of times there is technique, there is structure, there are rules that we follow, and then sometimes we purposely break.
Yeah.
So there is this art side, but there's also the science side, the art, that we do brush strokes a certain way, or we play the guitar. Like, give me the guitar and I'm not going to do the right systems and the right framework, and it's going to be nasty noise, right? Because I'm not doing the system. I don't know the system, right? So what's interesting is you can apply that into business as well, is understanding that there is the art side, there is the creativity, and that's really where I refocused my creative energy over the last several years, is naturally that creative outlet just allowed me to see opportunities where everybody else didn't see them. Mm-hmm. Where everybody else is looking one direction, I look the opposite. Where, you know, what's wrong? Okay, what's the solution? And it comes down to asking questions. That's something I learned a long time ago, is just ask myself a different question. Why everybody else is focused on the problem and saying why, you know, I just redirect and say, what can I do because this just happened? What's the new opportunity? You know, what, you know, so it's just open-ended questions: who, what, where, when, how, why, you know, in a positive direction, you know, and when you do that, the mind will give you answers. It's amazing. Yeah. You know, and I know a lot of us do this with art, you know, whether it's creating a song, whether it's creating a painting, you know, what color do I use? Like what depth, what angle, what perspective? We're asking ourselves questions, you know, and that's something like in photography, if I have limited depth of field, what do I focus on? Do I want you to be in focus and blur out the background? Do I want to focus on the imagery behind you so the eye goes there? Like I can, it's a different question. It's just a different question. And but you can be purposeful. And that's the thing, is that you can be intentional and purposeful by saying, you know, here's where I'm at. How could I attract more clients right now? Where are the type of clients that I want? Where are they hanging out? Are they people I want to break bread with? Because in a lot of cases, they're probably not.
Yeah.
You know, but am I okay with going where they hang out and being in their circle so I can become relevant and be on the radar so they will buy my work?
Yeah. You know? And that's so the difference between come to me because I have my art, and me going, no, I'm going to go to where you are and I'm going to bring my art to you.
Exactly.
Big, big difference. Big mindset shift.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because I tell you, this is not Field of Dreams. You know, yeah. if you build it, they will not come. I think a lot of us realize that you can just sit there forever. And again, I'm telling you, and it comes back to, you could be level 10 on your technique, your experience, your background, everything. But if you do not put yourself in the right places, if you do not put yourself in the right circles, if you purposely do not align and position yourself and brand yourself properly in this day and age with all the noise that are out that's out there in the world in general, then you just wrapped yourself in a level one opportunity. You're sitting there hoping, you're doing, I call it the hope and pray method. You're crossing your fingers and you're hoping and praying that your email pings or that your phone rings and you're in a reactive state. And you know what? Even if you got that big sale today, when you're reactive, you can't duplicate it. Mm. Like you can't wish it to happen next week. You know what I mean? So now you're at the whim of the market finding you. But instead, think about it. Here I am right now. Like you reached out, but you don't realize the chain of events for to get on the podcast was that I had to make a conscious effort to get on that stage, to be positioned for the person, you know, our mutual friend, Matt, that had that stage for us to talk on, for you then to get the impression to then pull in, you know, bring me on here today. There is a real ripple effect. And that's where I think a lot of people take it for granted these days.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, we're in a world right now where everybody thinks like relationships don't matter anymore. Like everything's about scale. Everything's about, can I have 1,000 people following me? Can I have 10,000 people following me? Can I have a million people following me? You know what? You only need a few people that are raving fans that believe in you because you actually believe in them and actually had a real conversation. Yeah. Those people could be influencing many people. Again, absolutely. Just like Matt and his stage, because I was there, I'm on your podcast right now.
Yeah.
You understand? So it's like, that's the ripple effect. But if I was a 007 secret agent and I was holding and waiting for people to find my thing, I would have never interacted with Matt years ago for him to trust me and my message to allow me to be the closing keynote speaker on his stage. Like that was a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't take that lightly, you know, so just something that is but again, we have to get out of our comfort zones. We have to be okay. Because if we're sitting there quietly, you know, just isolating ourselves, then we are the highest bidder of our own work. Cause we're the only ones staring at it. Mm-hmm. We're the only ones that know about it.
Yeah.
There's other people that less technique, less like they're not as good as probably you, but they're relevant to the people that will buy.
Such great advice. I really appreciate you spending the time with us today. And
thank you.
Just as we close up, where can people find you? How can they just follow what you're doing? I know you have a Facebook group that's very active that people can join into. Give us a little information on that.
Yeah. So these days, I've been helping entrepreneurs my entire life. When I had the real estate company, I had over 200 agents that I coached. And I used to travel around the United States and abroad and teach and train on behalf of Century 21 Corporation and teach their program. So I'd land in. So I'd always have to talk about branding, marketing, positioning, selling, overcoming objections, things like that. Well, these days, everything's online, you know, that, you know, because when you sell your art locally, then yes, you have a place where people come physically, right? But then you're only limited to the people that can physically come. Now we're in a different world where as an artist, your market is the entire world. And the way we do that is online. So we leaned in and we have a Facebook group where we go live every day. And just like these type of insights, I normally just give one simple actionable idea from my years of in the background expertise and experiences. So it's very easily consumable. But we give one idea a day for everybody that's inside of our community. It's called Internet Marketing Biz. And you can actually get lead into that Facebook group if you go to internetmarketingbiz.com. There's actually a link there that'll take you right to the Facebook group. Because I know sometimes when people just type things in, they might end up in 30 different places when you go right on social media. But it's something like, we're a no-ego zone. We're very open-minded and we're just doing 100% give in there every day. We come in and just give one little knowledge nugget, just something to think about. Sometimes it's an actionable item. Sometimes it's just a way, maybe it's a limiting belief that's holding us back and for us to relook at those things. But that's where you can find myself and my wife, Melissa. You can find us there on a daily basis, giving as much knowledge, transferring that knowledge as we can.
Awesome. And I highly recommend the listeners to go check that out. I'll put a link in the show notes to make it real easy and so that you can join in and continue to learn from Paul, because again, he is just someone who, man, I love the way that you process, the way that you look at things and you challenge the people around you. It's one of those, you cause people to rise, to see things that they wouldn't normally see and to step out and experience things for themselves that really... they may have had some block and you help strip away some of those things. So thank you so much for today. Thank you for all the things we talked about. I know this is going to be tremendously valuable, and I feel like I need to go back and listen to this again, another pass, because so much, again, so much great content, and love that you're just so freely sharing your story as well.
Great. Thank you. And again, thank you for the opportunity of being here and talking to your audience. I don't take that responsibility lightly. So thanks again.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.